Session number 14972, Richard Atkinson, Reel 18.
Mr. Atkinson, Reel 16. We're talking about your mail, Mr. Atkinson. Censorship, did that continue right through to the end of the war? On your letters?
Yes. Well, it just seemed to disappear. After the armistice, after the surrender, I will see armistice, and it wasn't. After the surrender, it just seemed to disappear. You just hand it to the post corporal, and before you had to hand it off, then he censored him. Yeah, your own officer. But that went. It'll go off again half an hour's time, mate.
So, in events, it ceased with the end of the war?
Yes. End of the war was sort of everything relaxed. Because the fellas wasn't interested, they're just counting the demobbed, because you had your demob number, but not the day. You knew you were grouped. And so you knew it wasn't that far away, and everything sort of relaxed. And they started the school in Lark, and that was haphazard, you didn't do it.
Sport and leisure with
you? Oh, sport and everything just flourished, the start. It always did go on, even in the desert, you had your hockey and your basketball and stuff like that, and it just all came to the football and whatnot, and I think they started to play civilians and stuff like that by this time, because the fraternization ban was relaxed. So they tried to, not peacetime, but come back to some semblance of normal life.
Did you get involved in guarding the prisoners that
no
the hierarchy?
No, they were always the Red Caps. That was the Red Caps. You were handed over to them, and they, and Brigade, they were sort of whipped straight away back that far, and then Brigade took over. Like Colonel Sell and them, they would all be handed over to him personally, and he would decide who's from there on. You'd see them come through, even ordinary prisoners, even ordinary men. You search them for arms and whatnot, and pass them straight back. Yeah, regimental police who would hand them over to military police.
Were you picking up ex-Nazis and SS?
Oh yes, you're always on the search for them. There was always checks. They had the spot checks, road checks and stuff like that. And you often see that going on. You see, like when we liberated Belsen, that was the thing. We had never seen anything like that in our lives before. And they said, we stopped on the outskirts of this place called Belsen, and they said, you mustn't go in, there's typhus, there's raging, you're not allowed in. And all of a sudden, the captain quartermaster says to me, come with me, Atkinson, and said, I want to put someone on the truck. Went in, and this was this camp, and it stunk. One side of the road was a camp, the other side was houses, and they said that it wasn't there. Anyway, it's past history, they cleansed them up and made them bury the dead properly and all that, but they record everything on film. The British Army. And there's a law passed that had to be shown in every village and town and hamlet in Germany, and they had to be made to go to the cinema to watch it. Because they denied it ever went on, and they didn't want to know. Even Belsen people. So what you do is just round the people up. This was after the surrender. Round the people up, make them go to the cinema where it was in. And this day I remember put them in where you stand at the door till they come out, you see. And Fincher said, what's the matter? Somebody went in and said, oh, he's making them watch it again. The officer who was in charge, somebody had laughed while it was on. So he just went through the whole lot. And when they got up, he says, sit down, you'll watch it again. We don't encourage laughing in this. He made them watch it again. There's no laughter the second time. That's the sort of thing that went on with the Germans, like said that. They had to be taught a lesson. We enjoyed teaching them a lesson, to be honest.
Did you actually see the camp itself?
Yes.
And the inmates?
Yeah. It was you couldn't believe anybody could do anything they get from another person, and an animal, anything. But see, we're stupid again. We start giving tins of bully beef and we're killing them. We had to be stopped and had to be done correctly, slowly and methodically, and then that was could be revived, helped the ones that couldn't, and made them bury the dead properly and dig proper pits and stuff like that. Couldn't believe it.
What did the camp look like as you came to? As you came up?
Well, it says, I say, we're stopping the outskirts, and it said there was typhus in the village. So, you know, British Army has been doubly careful. And all of a sudden, it says 3 or 4 trucks had to go in. And I think he, Quartermaster, was going in to assess what was necessary. But when we got in, we couldn't. There was nothing we could do. That's what I said. We just started giving us, you know, and we stopped. And then, of course, we were took back. We were infantry men's useless, so they had to bring in proper people, you know, like medical corps and whatnot took over. There's nothing we could do. We just moved away from it. We moved on to other things.
It had been released before you got there, though.
Well, the tank had gone in or something, you see, gone to the village. The tank had gone to the village and seen us on one side and the people on the other side. And they denied it was there. They couldn't see it. They could smell it. You could, you know, it was there. It was just a chain link fence. You could see it.
How did that make you feel it was a German? Did it change what you'd already felt?
No, because, honestly, we'd never heard of anything like that before. You know, we heard concentration camps and we thought it was just like a Durham jail sort of thing. We'd never heard of anything like this, what they could do to people like that and kill them like that. And to be honest, the fighting troops never comes across anything. You know, when you're fighting each other, you sort of respect each other. And then the sword, and it just knocked you back for a day or two and left your mind, to be honest, until the film came out and you had to take them around again and then it revived. Now when it comes on television, now Joan said to me, I said, I don't want to watch it. I don't look. When it comes on, she'll say, there's blood. I said, I don't want to see it. But you can still smell it. You can still see it.
But the main battalion didn't go in. It was just the few trucks that went into it, which you were a member.
Well, I happened to have a quartermaster. But, I mean, I suppose it would be the MO would be there and some big noise from brigade. I don't know. But, you know, that. And then we were out in the way. As I say, they decided proper authorities would have to, I suppose it would be the Red Caps that would take over the running and bring proper people in. Because, I mean, we didn't know what it was. We couldn't do anything. We didn't have any means of doing anything, to be honest. We would only made matters worse because we'd have went like a bullet at a china shop at it.
At this time, as you said, demobilisation must have started and people would be leaving the battalion.
Yes. Mm.
As a demobilised group left, was there any other group coming in to make up the numbers?
No.
They're just running you down?
It seemed to be running it down. But, yes, I can't remember. You might get different regiments come in for a day or two that was going out around the same group as them. But there's no reinforcements coming to Durham to, you know, where you're doing ceremonial duties and guards and whatnot. There seemed to be none of that coming to make them up.
How were you feeling at this time? Because the war had been over for a number of months.
Oh, yes, it had been over for a year. So
how were you 46, feeling?
46, wasn't it? Yeah, I think it had been over for a year.
How were you feeling, the fact that you were still there?
Well, you're getting a bit sick, you know. You see, I was a lower group. We've been a territorial. I was group 27. Well, group ones, twos, you know, sixes, there's very few in them because they're old men, they had been out or they had been killed, or, you know, them ones. So, you know, you're saying to yourself, well, they've gone, so it must be getting near my time. You're sort of, you know, looking, when's my time coming? Because I think I had another leave in the meantime. And then you didn't have a date, but you had a group. See, that's how I was group 27, which was pretty early on in the war, early on in the demob. We thought we'd just go, when the war went out, you know, whoosh, we didn't think it was going to spread out like this. You see, and then the funny part about it was, when they give us a date, we're sitting around in the billets this night, and said, oh, Dick, you're going Wednesday morning, you're getting the 8 o'clock train to Hanover? Are you looking forward? You start to speak, should I leave? Should I not? Because you're going in the army as a kid. Apprentice bricklayer. I hadn't finished my time. I was an improver. Come out, I was saying to myself, God, I'll have to start a married man now. I'll have to start earning a living. And I hadn't finished my trade. How do I go on now for that? And the army says to me, I was B release. It was an A release and a B release. B release, your time was up and you got your full whack of leave and your money and everything. A release, you could go tomorrow, you got a fortnight's leave and you went straight to a job they give you. Like me, I've gone to build somewhere where they said, well, I'd wait all this time and about 12 days or something before I was due for it to come out. I had the day. They said to me, Atkinson, you can go tomorrow on A release. I says, you must be joking. I said, I've waited 6 years and I can't wait another 12 days and I'm going to lose 133 days leave and 133 days money for the sake of 12 days. I said, no, I'll wait the 12 days. But I mean, if that offered me A in the first place, I would have took it. But I had B by this time, you see, which meant I could come out and I took every day me release, me leave and everything, me money, because you got paid all the time until that was up. And then you had to go in for a test in Newcastle and they said, oh, well, you're a good enough tradesman, you'll do a fortnight in your class as a tradesman. But they sent us to work over there. They sent you where to work. It was still essentials works order was on. They said where you could work and where you couldn't.
Was A release specially skilled men, the one that gets straight in?
Yes, the one that builders and stuff out for houses and shipyards and pits. They were the men that went out, you see.
Before we come to the actual demobilisation and what followed, it was Group 27, you say. The waiting time between the end of the war and getting demobilised, and obviously the feelings that involved, did that make discipline a little more difficult within the battalion?
Oh, yes, because he didn't want to do, you know, you couldn't care less about being stickman on guard. You say, oh, well, I'll be out shortly. Oh, I'll just, you know, sally through. You know, and you just did the bare necessity to get by. You didn't want to. It's no good. You weren't going for a promotion. I think you're going to be out. So you just did what was told of you. Kept your nose clean, and made sure that you enjoyed yourself. But the thing was, you see, you didn't know the date, so you had to box clever. You knew your group, and then they give you a date. You had to just play along with them, and make sure you didn't get into trouble because they could keep you in. You know, if you got yourself into trouble, the charges and whatnot, they could defer your demob date. So you had to fight box clever that way.
So one night, day, the information came that you were due to leave at such a time.
On daily orders.
That take me through the process from there.
Well, you see, you knew your group. It was marking your paper, Group 27. And then come on daily orders, you know, what you dressed for the day and what your duties for the day was and what you're doing. And they have on Group 26, 27 group release date is, say, 13th of March. This could be the January or February. See, it was usually about a month beforehand. You knew the date. And then you couldn't care less. You just made sure you kept out of trouble until that time. And you volunteered for nothing, you did nothing, you skived, you made sure that that was the orders for that. When I got that thing, you're worried, and I sat this night in the billets and I spun a coin while I stayed in the army, I came out. And it came, tails, I come out and tails, it came down tails. But it was as close as that. Because, let's face it, it was a sheltered life in the army, it was a family life. You didn't think for yourself, you didn't, and everything was there. It was a good life. You couldn't say anything else. You know, you were looked after. Your welfare was there, and you couldn't go wrong. You hadn't to think for yourself. And you're saying, oh, I've got to come to Civvy Street. I've got to start working. I've got to stand on my own 2 feet now. You know, and you thought of all the bad things. And I see, I spun a coin up the night before I came out. And it came down tails, so I came out. Or head, whatever it was, but I came out.
So you were told what time you were leaving?
Yes, they'd say, like, right, Atkinson, Group 27 will be on the Hanover train. Well, it was a connecting train from Una, a little bit village, to Hanover at 7:22 or whatever it was, the train time in the morning. And that was it.
And
you left.
What did you take with you, actually, with yourself, on your purse?
Kit, on all your kit.
That was your kit bag?
Your kit bag, yeah. What you had, you took out.
Rifle, did that go back with you?
No, rifle didn't. Rifle stayed. Well, we didn't have rifles by this time. Well, Sten guns and revolvers were had by this time.
Do you recall the date that this information came through?
I recall the demob date, which I think would be about a month before that, and I was demobbed on March the 13th, 46. No, sorry, 11th of March,
36. 46. 46. So, you get on the train, obviously. Where did that take you?
Down to Wesel. Stopped, and they gave us a meal, and it was across the Rhine there. Came down to Cali, because that's where you come and leave. Cali to Dover, Dover to York.
What happened when you got to York?
Well, you went in this big army camp, army barracks. I don't know which ones it was, but it was in the centre of York, there's an army barracks somewhere, and we're in there. And then the sort of, you had these fellas come around giving you talks, and you're getting demobbed and that, and there'd be spivs outside the door wanting to buy your suits off you. If you take a suit, don't sell them it and all this, you see. You warn you all the things, like, in what your race was in your paper. There's an awful lot of paperwork, I'll never forget that. You had to sign, because your army greatcoat doesn't belong to the army, they buy that back from you. You had to sell that back to them. You know, sign the papers and they tore that bit out of your discharge book. Your big discharge book, pages and pages of it. And they tore that out, that you sold the greatcoat back to them. Did you want the buttons, because they're stab buttons? Yes, you took the buttons. No, you didn't want the buttons, things like that. And then the medical, you had your medical, say what. But I had my medical in Germany before that. See, now there's another thing I should have told you about. When I was in the army, I had enlarged tonsils. And if I didn't want to do anything, I used to just do a little bit of shouting and make my tonsils enlarge. I was excused the next morning, whatever it was, if I didn't want to do it. And it was a good racket. See, it was a forced march coming up, and I didn't want to do it. So my throat's gone, enlarged tonsils, right, miss it. So when they come to get demobbed, they get checked at the other end. Well, this fella comes to me, says to me, Atkinson, you don't go till you get your tonsils out. Oh, I says, that's handy. So I had to go to this military hospital somewhere in Germany. And this fella was a specialist from London, Guy's Hospital, whatever, big hospital. He's on his way to the Middle East, because that war wasn't finished. And he's experimenting on the way out. And I had to get my tonsils out, and this fella had to have his nose done. And he's just lying on a bed, and he's cutting his nose. No anaesthetic. The bone in his nose for sinus or whatever it was, I don't know. So it was local anaesthetic, of course, you know. So he got and went away. And it was my turn. And I sat on a stool. He sat on a stool. He put his legs around mine, his knees. He started to spray and took my tonsils out. I says to him, my knees were shaking naturally. He says, you have to keep your knees still. He says, I'll cut your throat and I mean your tonsils. But his was shaking through me. He just took my tonsils out and he says, there's the first one. He dropped in the bucket, then the second one. And I screamed in the middle, come out. It was easy. He was experimenting for, I says, well, I experimented with penicillin and now this. But I mean, no ill effect. No, it never affected me. I just had ice cream and stuff and I came out. But the orders was, you don't get them tonsils out, you don't get a demob. See, the other one going to have me come back later on and said, I contacted the army, I want the pension. That's all that was for, but that was one of the things. But when I come to York, that all had to be examined again to make sure it was all right. You know, stuff like that in the demob centre.
And the medical you got in York was a thorough one?
No, it was the usual check your tonsils and the flat feet and the no hemorrhoids and stuff like that, you know, just so you couldn't come back at them later on.
But you said you didn't get a pension, so they must have.
Oh, I didn't come up with a pension. No, that's another story.
Just briefly to go back, we didn't really. You mentioned it, but we didn't really go right through with it. You said that you were taking classes because of the election coming up.
Yeah.
Did you vote or?
Oh yeah, take a vote by proxy. You had to nominate somebody in this country. Like, she nominated your mother or whatever it was, and you presume that. Well, see, as I reckon, the forces put Churchill out, they reckon. So But you see, I know I've voted Labour, I've always voted Labour. But whether my mother voted Labour for me, I don't know, because she was a strong Conservative. I don't know, but I'd take her word. I nominated my mother to vote for me, as a sent her me vote as a Labour. You didn't vote on the site, say, you voted here. It's voted as proxy.
Now, to come back to the mob situation again, you've got your medical, you're in this camp in York. What was the next thing?
Well, it's all your entitlements and whatnot, you know, your, how much leave you get, how much money you get, and all this. And then they warned you that not to flog your clothes, because, you know, it was companies and whatnot, which we hadn't had no dealings with companies. Like, you know, and they warned you about those sort of things. You get caught and companies look at this stuff. And they come down to, I think it was Woolworths, and the stuff was all laid out. Shirt, you could, if you've got a suit, you've got a shirt. If you've got a sports suit, you've got a shirt and a pullover, you know, that sort of thing. If you pick the sports outfit, flannels and a sports coat, you've got a shirt and a pullover. If you pick the suit, you've got a white shirt and a trilby hat. You know, that's the way it worked, that. Because I remember I says to the fella about cufflinks, that two leg buttons were a bit threat to them. I says, you know, they're on the counter. I says, is that me cufflinks? I says, they're a little bit tacky. What do you want for nothing? I says, well, I don't think I've done nothing for 6 years. But that's the sort of thing it was. And it was put in a big cardboard box. This trilby hat was stuck on your head and you walked out.
You said this was wool, not a warehouse.
No, it was wool. I'm sure it was Woolworths. It was a shop. But there's tailors standing on with tapes on, you know, measuring you up for a suit. But there's about five suits on the wall. You know, like a pinstripe or that. And that. And they, you picked that one and you measured it and you went away and got the one that was then put in a box.
Were the people outside waiting to
Yes. You know, I'll give you £2 or whatever it was for your box, your suit. What's in? See, but you listen to what you're told and I carried it home. It's a cardboard box, like what you see your suit in now. But you're on battle dress. You kept your battle dress.
The payments you got was a certain savings that the army had made for you?
Well, it was gratuity. I think I got about £156 or something. That was, you know, so much for each day of the year you've been fighting, stuff like that. Wasn't much, but you got all that. And you got your army pay up till the time. I think you drove the fortnight or something for the 133 days leave you had. They got then finished.
Briefly, what did you do when you were anymore? Which way did your life go?
Well, as I say, I came out home and I had to go in front of this board for me trade, because I wasn't a tradesman when I went in. And married man, I had to have my money made up to tradesman's money. So they decided at what stage you were and how long you had to go to finish it as an apprentice, become a man's money. So, see, the government said I had to do 4 weeks. So that meant they made my money up from an apprentice's money to a tradesman's money for 4 weeks, and the firm had to pay me. I was classed as a tradesman, and they had to pay me man's money. So, but they said which firm I went to work and where I worked. See, I was sent over, and there's a house and estate over here, and they say this road. There was nothing there, it was just fields, for a fellow called R.W. Carlyle. I had to work for him, I couldn't do nothing, I was stuck with him. You couldn't just change because the essential works order was on.
So this board had highlighted places where they wanted certain skilled men.
Yes.
And you had to go there.
You had to go there.
That was your first job.
You got the papers, and you went to this board, in front of this board, and they give you a test, a practical test. I mean, there's a Navy lad with me, and I think he had 2 years to do. I says, well, you mustn't have been much of a tradesman when you went there. He was the same age as me. But I only had 4 weeks, he had 2 years to do. It was all bricklayers in this class, you see.
What was the attitude to your new employer, to you coming out of the army and having this brief?
You're strange. You didn't know civilian life. You know, you had to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning until 12, and you come back at 12:30 from dinner and stuff like that. Well, that wasn't in the army. You know, if you were late, and your dinner was kept for you and stuff like that. It was complete different way of life, and also you start paying tax and stuff like that. You know, you had tax forms to fill in and whatnot. But you're on about the pension. I didn't come out with the pension. I came out day one.
And yet you got a pension.
You see, in your paperwork again. I came out day one. And this fella, Jimmy Hanlon, never forget him, he was with us, he was on the 9th. He got shot in the leg, got wounded in the leg, and he disappeared. He went to hospital, didn't come back. Where he went, I don't know. But he got a bullet wound to the calf of his leg, the muscle of his leg. And somebody said, oh, he lost his leg and all that. So never, that went by. That must have been in the desert somewhere. I'm out, civilian, watching. There's a football match going on the Saturday morning. I come from work. There's kids playing. And this Jimmy Hanlon was running up and down refereeing them. And I looked at him, I says, hey, I says, I thought you were had your leg off. Oh, I know. He said, I've got a pension for it, man. He said, I'm kind of woke, I've got a pension. I said, you're refereeing a football match. He says, just fill the form in the back of your release book. Well, before my story started, when I come out, I had to rejoin the trade union, strict in those days. And I went to my own doctor to be in the trade union. I have a certificate to say you're 100% fit for the union sickness fund and pension fund. So I went to him and he gives a form. So he examined this, said, yes, you're fit. So I joined the union. Well, a fortnight after, I met this fellow and I filled the release form in for the apply for the pension. So I was told to go to St. Mary's Place, Newcastle, which is a civic centre now, in front of a medical board. When I get there, my own doctor's on the board. And I says, well, that's out. He just gives the certificate a phony to go to see how it's fit. Anyway, there's three doctors, and they measure your scars and take it all down. You tell them what happened and where it is. And they've got x-rays and whatnot or whatever. They've got the army records anyway, so they know exactly what you're talking about. I get the pension. My own doctor that's made us fit a phony beforehand gives us a pension. So I finished up with a 20% pension, which I had 4 years.
And this was for the shrapnel that's still inside you? I think
but I came out here one.
lodged near your spine.
Spine, yeah. So I believe. I mean, I do get a bad back and it goes up. And when this woman doctor comes to exam, she says you've got spine spondylosis, I don't know what it is, spine.
How difficult was it for you to settle down to civilian life? Oh, you mentioned the fact about work and that.
It was very hard.
At home?
It was very hard. You had to knuckle under. You had been a free and easy spirit before that. You know, you were your own man and that. And it was very, very hard to fit in the civilian life. You know, well, it was completely, totally different. The army, you were looked after, you were thought for, you were cared for. Now you're on your own 2 feet and it's up to you. If you worked, you got money. If you didn't, you were starving, sort of thing.
How did you find it in the home situation itself? I mean, you're used to lying in the backs of trucks and so forth.
Well, I couldn't sleep in a bed for a bit, I'll tell you that. It was very, very difficult to learn to sleep in bed. And of course, clothing coupons and bread coupons and ration coupons and stuff like that, they were all new to us. And as I say, paying income tax and things like that, and filling forms and things. But there was lots of things that that it just didn't gel. You couldn't understand it.
Did you have moods?
Oh, yes. You're saying to yourself, you know, sitting here in the house when I'll be with the lads, I'll be boozing and things like that. Oh, yes, it must have been very difficult for your wife to get used to. For all she was in the forces, had been in the forces, it must have been very, very difficult. And you didn't want no discipline, you see. That was it. You'd had all the discipline you wanted. You thought you were free and easy, which didn't work that way.
How long would you say it took you to settle for that reason?
Oh, not long. I mean, I didn't have any family. It was a year or so before I had any family. So then I think he sort of realised that it was over and you were there to... If you didn't get it, you wouldn't get it, sort of style. If you didn't make an effort, nobody's going to help you to get it. See, now you're living with your parents as well. You didn't have a house. And that used to rankle your wife, and you couldn't please yourself. And you got a house. You know,
did you live with your mother?
I had to live with my mother for 3 years till I got a house. Till I got this one, actually. And the council gave us a house because I was an ex-serviceman.
Where did your work take you to from the first company?
When they relaxed the works order, they relaxed that, and I started working on better jobs in housing. I didn't care much for housing, you know, starting on power stations and hospitals and stuff like that, you know. And I was going down south to work as well a lot then, into Corby and Kettering, where the steelworks, working the steelworks a lot on open hearth. Of course, good money. You see, it was fantastic money and things like that. And it was like the army, you to get a travel voucher once every 6 weeks to come home. You're in digs there, and you're away for senior. It was like the army again, but only much better money.